Good morning. This is the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Bob Martin, and we're here again reading from this week's Independent, dated Wednesday, January 31st, 2018. We begin today with The Triangulator. Laying Pavement. A proposal to build a highway across southern Raleigh is drawing fire from opponents who say it's not worth the steep price tag or the negative environmental impacts. The six-lane highway, known as Complete 540, would run about 28 miles and polish off a beltway around the greater Raleigh area, and the North Carolina Department of Transportation is moving quickly. But will this project actually benefit residents of southern Wake County? Or will it exasperate sprawl and harm the environment? Here's what you need to know. First, the project will cost about $2.2 billion to construct. And when it's finished, it will link the towns of Apex, Cary, Clayton, Garner, Fuquay-Varina, Holly Springs, and Raleigh, according to the North Carolina Department of Transportation. Proponents tout its benefits for commuters, saying the completed beltway will reduce traffic and congestion for drivers making their way south and east of Raleigh during peak traveling hours. The county supports this route because it's viewed as better than an alternative option, which would have cut through Garner. Moreover, officials note that this project has been planned for a quarter century. Opponents argue that the project is unnecessary, expensive, and will damage the environment and lead to sprawl. The Southern Environmental Law Center, which represents the groups Clean Air Carolina and Sound Rivers in their opposition to the Beltway, say it was led to believe that it could make its case before state and federal officials signed off on the final environmental impact statement, which the state said would happen this summer. Instead, officials published it a few days before Christmas, leading environmentalists to scramble ahead of the February 1st deadline for public comment. The NNO reported that last week. According to that environmental standard, the endeavor would affect more than 1,820 acres of land and cause about 209 homeowner relocations. It would also cross a number of rivers and streams and could threaten two species of endangered mussels. Note, the NC Department of Transportation has pledged $5 million to help the mussels. The DOT expects to issue its first contracts for final design and construction by this time next year. Emails obtained through a records request indicate that DOT and Turnpike Authority officials knew about the earlier timeline last year. In a September 13th email to his boss, project manager Brian Yamamoto wrote, "Warning, Turnpike Authority has been very close to the vest with the schedule information that gets written, even on status reports like the one you are working on. If our likely litigants become aware of the schedule that we are working towards, they will likely file FOIAs that will delay the schedule. So be careful what you supply to this group in writing." And the extremely high cost of the project, over $2 billion, coupled with the low expected traveling savings for most commuters, renders the project an absurd waste of North Carolina's transportation resources. The SCLEC wrote that in comments submitted to the DOT in 2016. The organization plans to release an alternative to the proposed extension in the coming week. Next, roadblocks. Last week, Politico obtained a six-page white paper circulating on Capitol Hill that purported to be a draft of the White House's long-awaited infrastructure plan. The White House hasn't confirmed the draft's accuracy, and it's not clear that, even if it's legit, it's the most current version. Regardless, it was enough to set off a wave of speculation and anxiety. The white paper proposes $200 billion in federal funding for infrastructure projects, a relative pittance the Trump administration hopes to leverage into $1.8 trillion in infrastructure spending when combined with state and local funding and public-private partnerships. As a part of that shift from federal to local government spending, the proposal would lower the federal match on capital improvement projects from 50% to 20%. The potential problem. The Durham-Orange Light Rail Transit Project relies on that 50% match for its $2.5 billion, not including interest, on their rail line. That cut would cost GO Triangle $700 million. Is that something the local transit agencies worried about? What would it mean for the program? We just don't know, says General Manager Jeff Mann. There are many blanks to be filled in, but a key question is whether this funding change would only apply to future projects or to projects like the DOLRT that are already in progress. Probably the former, says a Democratic congressional staffer who works on infrastructure legislation. The Federal Transit Administration has already given the DOLRT a thumbs up to proceed to the next phase of the project. In fact, the new program's funding could be a bigger threat, the staffer says. If the White House gets its way, the $200 billion won't come from new revenue, but instead from cuts to current spending. And the Trump administration's first budget zero-funded the grant from which GO Triangle is applying. So it's possible the White House will try to redirect those funds. Next article, banned in the DPS. Last week, the North Carolina Department of Public Safety announced it would immediately remove the new Jim Crow mass incarceration in the age of colorblindness from its list of publications that are banned in state prisons and review wherever other publications should be removed from the list. The move came a day after the ACLU of North Carolina sent DPS officials a letter demanding they do so. Prohibiting Michelle Alexander's award-winning 2010 book is not only a violation of prisoners' First Amendment rights, the ACLU said, but also cruelly ironic given the critical role it plays to understanding the pervasive racial injustice behind our epidemic of mass incarceration. North Carolina isn't the only state where the book has been banned in prison. Earlier this month, under fire from the state's ACLU chapter, New Jersey prisons lifted their ban on the book. It's also banned in Florida. DPS policy lets a facility prohibit an inmate from receiving a publication for a range of reasons that largely fall under the umbrella of disrupting institutional order, security and safety, and inmate rehabilitation. Sexually explicit material, like Booty, Pirate Queens Volume 1, is prohibited in North Carolina prisons, as well as publications depicting violence. A Game of Thrones, Volume 1, or Insurrection, the Anti-Government Movement Guidebook, can be banned. How-to information on manufacturing weapons, drugs, or poisons, disabling communication or security systems, or escaping from confinement may also be grounds for prohibition. Large hardcover books may also be banned, the Encyclopedia of North Carolina, with an exception made for legal and religious publications. However, according to policy, no publication or material will be withheld solely on the basis of its appeal to a particular ethnic, racial, or religious group. A publication may not be rejected solely because its contents is religious, philosophical, political, social, or sexual, or because its content is unpopular or repugnant. The most recent disapproved publication report includes 480 titles prohibited in the past 12 months. Among the more unusual inclusions, Maya Angelou's I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, because it features the rape of a minor. Prison Ramen, a book of ramen recipes devised by inmate cooks that apparently include instructions on how to stow a razor blade. Hope, a memoir of survival in Cleveland, written by two women who in 2013 famously escaped 10 years of captivity in a Cleveland man's home, and the May 2017 edition of Elle Decor, and the October 27 issue of O, the Oprah magazine, for reasons unknown. Turning now to the news section, the case of unspent funds. Alliance Behavioral Healthcare returned $14 million to Wake County. Is that good for people with mental health issues? People with mental illness in Wake County could benefit from $14 million returned by Alliance Behavioral Healthcare, the publicly funded organization that provides care in Wake, Durham, Cumberland, and Johnston counties. Given the perennial shortage of money available to care for people with mental illness, the refund might come as something of a surprise. Denise Foreman, Wake County Assistant County Manager, told commissioners at the January 16th meeting how it came about. "We've used state dollars instead of local dollars, or had projects that took a little longer to get started, or we have accumulated savings over the past 5 years," Foreman said. Commissioner Matt Calabria called the leftover funding a major, major deal. "This is the first time we are really showing this publicly," Calabria said at the commissioner meeting. "Through good management, we have saved $14 million. However, some advocates for people with mental illness are looking askance at the return of the unspent money to Wake County. Ann Ackland has been a major voice for the constituency for more than 20 years, serving on state boards for the National Alliance on Mental Illness. It has bothered us that there's that money and that the county hasn't used it, and they know about all the needs out there for mental health," Ackland says. "We've really been concerned about the county sitting on that money. We'd be really concerned if it got directed toward building a park or bike lanes." Like Foreman, Kelly Goodfellow, Chief Financial Officer at Alliance, said the return money represented savings in cases where programs didn't pan out or were delayed, in addition to situations in which the organization used state funds first. Until this year, the unspent money appeared on Alliance's books. This year, it's available to Wake County. As one example of how Alliance saved money, the organization is contracted with medical professionals to look after the Fragile 500, Wake residents with complicated needs that might go unmet under Medicaid, the state and federal program for low-income people and children. The contractor for the Fragile 500 is paid on a fee-for-service basis, not based on a set amount per person, as in managed care. Instead of Alliance paying them $100 per person, they pay them based on the actual cost of the program, Foreman said. Last year, county and schools' budget generated a debate about what would happen to extra revenue that accrued from property taxes. This year, county staffers are recommending specific uses for the money returned by Alliance. It's currently restricted for use in behavioral health programs, but could be moved to unrestricted status by vote of the Board of Commissioners. Members of the Wake County School Board fought hard in the last budget cycle to add money for social workers and counselors to help at-risk students fare better in public school. Commissioners turned down that request. School counselors are in the realm of behavioral health, Foreman said, that they were asking for $10 million in recurring funds. Adds Ackland, "We wouldn't want the school system to manage that money anyway." Wake staff members planning the behavioral health spending from the return money are proposing projects that will only last for 1 year. "When it's on their books, they have more flexibility," said Goodfellow. "They have the ability to fund more quickly." Commissioners agreed earlier this month to spend $325,000 of the money and heard plans of how to use the rest. Wake plans to spend $90,000 for expert help in planning permanent supportive housing for people getting out of inpatient care, $35,000 for a consultant on special projects, and $200,000 for services to identify the people who belong to the category called familiar faces, those who have multiple encounters with the county jail, area hospitals, EMS, and other pieces of the sprawling network that takes on those with behavioral health problems. Last October's PAC Behavioral Health Summit produced a wealth of ideas for dealing with those folks and other consumers, ideas that are still being turned into reality. More approaches that hatched from the Health Summit could be funded by the money returned by Alliance. In planning for the fiscal year that starts July 1st, county staffers have proposed spending $8 million for permanent supportive housing for people leaving institutional care, $2 million for adult crisis services, $2 million to expand the scope of next year's contract with Alliance, and $1 million to turn the summit's concepts into reality. Among the ideas advanced was the use of data analysis to coordinate care and information in ways that result in lower costs and better outcomes. At the commission meeting, Foreman faced a battery of questions on whether the county's population with mental illness was being served well by the five-year-old relationship with Alliance known as the LME-MCO, or Local Management Entity Managed Care Organizations. Instead of providing care directly or through contractors, Wake County pays $27 million a year to Alliance, which selects companies or agencies to care for people with specific behavioral health needs. The LME-MCO approach is in use across North Carolina. The promise was that by more effectively managing these services in a professional environment, we could deliver better outcomes for our community at a lower price and controlled cost. Commissioner Irv Portman said, "What do we do to get the money we fund for mental health to help people and not in our fund because balance that was at the end of that year?" After 5 years of contracting with Wake County, Foreman said, "Alliance is better equipped to match its $27 million annual contract to Wake County citizens' needs. We won't see those types of savings in the future," she said. The next news article, Buzzkill. A local immigration attorney is facing charges for looking at her cell phone in court. 7 months ago, Raleigh immigration attorney Becky Mariello was looking at her cell phone during an asylum hearing in Charlotte. And for that, she's now looking at the possibility of fines or even jail time. Mariello is being prosecuted for failing to comply with the judge's orders to stop using her phone and for disrupting the performance of government employees' official duties. On Thursday, a judge is expected to hear a motion filed by her attorney seeking to dismiss the case. Mariello doesn't deny that she used her cell phone in the back row of Judge Barry Penman's court while observing an asylum hearing on June 29th, but she does argue that a directive from the Executive Office of Immigration Review allows attorneys to use cell phones in court for business purposes and that they do so frequently, making the regulation she is accused of violating vague and arbitrary. The attorney says a security guard approached her during the hearing and asked her to stop using her cell phone. The first time she responded that she was using the phone for work. The second time, Mariello refused his demand again, skeptical that Pinato would ask the guard to deliver the order rather than make it himself. The third time, the guard returned with a Charlotte cop, and she was escorted to an office elsewhere in the building. Since then, Mariello has been in court twice and must check in with officials regularly, including for permission to travel out of the state. Both sides say the case has gone too far. "There's no doubt that this is a waste of resources," Mariello says. "This is my tax money. that is paying for them to prosecute me for sitting silently in the back of the court staring at my lap. She feels singled out. Pignato has chided her once before, she says, for bringing weak cases and wasting the court's time. While the directive allowing attorneys to use their phones in court for work gives the judge discretion to order otherwise, Mariello says it's really allowing the judge to cherry-pick who she's going to stop. But the government says the case is clear-cut. Mariello not only disregarded signs prohibiting the use of electronic devices and subsequent orders by the judge, but also created a disturbance, according to court documents. Mariello's attorney is seeking audio of the hearing and the alleged disturbance, but the U.S. attorney on the case says it's confidential. This case could not be simpler, yet defendant has much on it, wrote Assistant U.S. Attorney Corey Ellis and Daniel Bradley in response to a motion to dismiss the case as unconstitutionally vague and a violation of the Constitution's Separation of Powers Clause. It is past time for this petty offense case to proceed to trial. The Executive Office of Immigration Review declined to comment on the pending litigation. Each charge carries a penalty of fines up to 30 days imprisonment or both. Mariello may also face repercussions from North Carolina State Bar Association. The association rules of professional conduct broadly say lawyers can be subject to discipline if they commit a crime that reflects adversely on the lawyer's honesty, trustworthiness, or fitness as a lawyer in other respects, or in engaged conduct to the same effect. I'm not going to lose my license over this, but they could reprimand me, Mariello said. And now this week's feature article, Eat Your Heart Out, the Indie Guide to Date Night Dining. It's a date. All's fair in love and food. I've been sneak dated so many times I've lost count. It's essentially when you're tricked into going on a date that you thought was just a casual, friendly hang. Such are the perils of modern dating, where it's scary to admit feelings. Or intention. You could be hanging out forever. Then there's the opposite end of the spectrum. A first date so official, read interrogative, that it feels like a job interview, except it's very obvious by the second or third question that there will be no upward mobility. In this vast sea of dating experience, what truly keeps the ebb and flow bearable is the food. At the very least, you should enjoy a delicious meal, or stiff drink, to help you through boring conversation. But it's a brewing attraction bubbles to the surface. A helping plate of culinary magic can only enhance it. Food is sensory, after all. For this edition of Dish, we've waded through the endless option of food-focused date nights and date days to reinvigorate romance or fuel a budding passionate tryst. And yeah, we've also included bars that will help ease jitters or just give you an excuse to get super sloppy. Your call. We ask local celebrities where they get flirty. We know you've been waiting for Petey Pablo's dating advice since Freak-a-Leak. He picked out our favorite spots off the beaten path and even included places to go incognito when you know everyone in town. There's also a generous timeline for planning an entire relationship worth of dinners, including where to break up, we're realists, as well as the best spots to go as a family or to take your own self out because, well, you just deserve it. Good luck out there. Lovers Yelp, a cynic's guide to where to eat at each stage of a budding, blooming, or busting romance. Human beings enjoy a bewildering variety of pastimes. How are you supposed to guess if your date would like to be asked to the museum or the bowling alley, to go on a romantic adventure, or just Netflix and chill? Food is a great equalizer because everybody's gotta eat. Plus, dining out is a socially acceptable way to flex the plumage of your taste and the liquidity of your capital, and to have an awkwardness-diffusing drink in an environment that's not expressly about getting drunk. Still, there's a fine art to choosing the right restaurant for the moment. Follow this guide and you'll be dinner dating like a pro in no time. If by pro you mean a single 38-year-old, you probably don't. First date. Okay. You only get one shot at this. Resist the temptation to go too fancy or too low-key. You want to shoot the gap between the two, trying too hard and DGAF. Besides, a 3-hour feast at Death and Taxes is going to be excruciating if it goes poorly, while an empanada plate at Luna is going to zip by too fast if it goes well. For somewhere impressive that doesn't feel like you're trying to impress, try Counting House, but not the dining room. The bar has all the art hotel chit-chat fodder. Hey, is that a chicken wing or rabbit fur coat over there? But with smaller, cheaper plates and cozy couches where curious knees can graze each other as you lean over a dish of oily olives. And, by the way, if date one was preceded by a date zero, like you randomly made out at an Arcana dance party or something, then you can probably skip the step and go straight to date three. Third date. Let's not be coy. It's 2018, and we've all been to this rodeo before. Three dates in, you are, how to put this delicately, you are open to certain possibilities. It's entirely possible that events will arrange themselves in such a way that you'll wish you hadn't had all those raw onions or black beans or spicy curries. By day three, you and your date tacitly agree you're worth splurging somewhere too expensive to go under the regs. Something light, luscious, and a little sexy, maybe. How about oysters at St. James Seafood? Tenth date. Figure out one or two dates a week and you've been hanging out with this person for a couple of months. Things are starting to accelerate and take shape. By now, you've had a particularly good date somewhere, and the memory is taking on the first tint of nostalgia. It's time to go back there. This is going to be your place. If you're lucky, it'll be somewhere like Garland, with consistent, inventive James Beard Award-nominated fare that won't break the bank. 50th date. A couple of months have somehow unspooled into a couple of years. Actual dates are coming slower. You keep talking about trying that hot new place, but the res is a pain. After half an hour of listless deliberation, shrug and head to the Spotted Dog for the millionth time, where everyone can get that perfect good thing they always get and eat in patchy silence, muffled by cheery 80s music and cute dog pictures. Oh, it's crowded? There's always Jade Palace takeout. Last date. Whether you're calling it quits or popping the question, you're going to want to put on a clean shirt for this one. Why waste it? Familiar enough for consolation, yet special enough for proposals. Lantern will do fine in either life-changing scenario. The dark black bar hides tears of sorrow or joy equally well, and have the adjacent patio makes for quick escape into the rest of your life, whether it's back to date zero or whatever comes next. Next, dining with the stars. We ask chefs and other local celebrities where they go for the best foodie dates. With all the hype surrounding our food scene, we wondered which restaurants serve the perfect date night meals to a few of our most beloved residents. We asked local chefs, musicians, and artists where they go, hopelessly romantic, or simply to go spend quality time with the people they care about. Jamil Rashad, a.k.a. Boulevards. A perfect night for me is going to my favorite restaurant, Capital Club 16. The atmosphere is vibey and makes you feel at home and comfortable. Jake Wolf is a great chef and serves solid and diverse menus that I love. It's a perfect setting for a date with someone you hope to find chemistry with. Justin Laidlaw, Director of Operations at Runway. My girlfriend, Eliza Matthew, and I are suckers for bar food. Parts and Labor is a go-to spot. We get a solid bite and start our night out in one place. The udon salad was my favorite for a long time. Eliza likes the chicken wings. We both enjoy the fries with a side of tomato chutney. Is it romantic? No. Can we live without it? Absolutely not. Plus, we love Jeff Register. Hands down, the best bartender in town. We often treat ourselves to sitar. Some chicken tikka masala goes a long way when you need a pick-me-up or want to reward yourself. I never had it before we started dating, but now it's in my top five favorite meals. Sitar is the only restaurant where I eat exclusively with her. Jessamine Stanley, author of Everybody Yoga. It's usually dashi. I love, like, communing over a bowl of ramen. Accordion club around 7 p.m. on a weekday is nice and quiet. Gachialina for the specials. It's like being in someone's house. Oh, and the terrine. So good. Then El Chapin. That is the spot. All the food is really good. The tierra amabar plate, those potato turnovers, it gets packed. So I'll do Uber Eats and order in for a cozy date. Colleen Speaks, Chef, Hummingbird. For my husband, Nick, and me, Stanberry is one of our go-tos. It feels like walking into a party where everybody's welcome. You can watch the chef at work in the kitchen, and the food and drinks are delicious and adventurous. It's hard to beat chilled raw oysters, their brined bone marrow, salt-crusted ribeye, and pretty much whatever bartender Joseph Jeffers is pouring. Matt Kelly, Chef Mateo, Lucky Deli, Mothers and Sons, and St. James Seafood. Chefs don't get a lot of date nights because we work at nights. But for date lunch, Parker Notice. I like it because I work nights and they're open on Saturdays for lunch and brunch. It's tasty, and you can get all kinds of chocolate there. It's accessible, too. It's around all my restaurants, and I have to go to work afterwards. That's the honest reason I like it, but it's also just really tasty. Ricky Moore, chef at Saltbox Seafood. Pizzeria Toro. That's a good date night. First of all, my wife endorses it. She appreciates how the food is being prepared there and the simplicity of it and the authentic welcoming experience. And in Raleigh, I'd say Miramanda. They take it to another level with their style of food. If you go there at a certain time, around 9:30, there's romanticism to it. It could be a particular night when it's rainy outside, and we just come in from the theater, and we're walking in through the door and shake our coats off. There's this warm light. We go to the bar and relax there and get a really thoughtful cocktail. Then we get a table for two at the corner, and all of a sudden, some certain music comes on, and you weave into a conversation. And let's not forget the food, perfectly seasoned with gracious service. Joe Choi, co-owner of Namu. When my wife Sheena and I go on a double date with Bo, Kwan co-owner of Namu, and his wife Curie, we go to Waraji in Raleigh. Their tatami-style rooms are fun and remind us of the way that we sit in Korea. Our favorite dishes are the chishari sushi and tempura udon. The quality and amount of food you get for the price is outstanding. You also ask for the grated wasabi, which brings out the truer flavors of the fish. For special occasions and celebrations, we go to Gochialonina. In fact, Shanae and I spent almost every anniversary and Valentine's Day there. We are in love with their great selection of Italian wines. Their food is nothing too complicated, but every dish is executed perfectly with the right balance of flavors. Every time we go, we order all the pasta on the menu and share. We request the bar seat close to the kitchen window. It's really entertaining to see all the action going on in the tiny kitchen. Drew Maycuth, chef at Stanberry. This date begins at food truck El Rey del Taco. These folks set the standard to judge all other tacos by. It's simple food done right. I get the mix, the lengua, asada, pastor, and tripe. A couple each. Get them to go. Bring a six-pack of Pacifico beer and lime and take a little walk. Less than a block and jump on the freeway. Now find a downed tree by the creek and sit on it. Eat some tacos, drink some beer, and if you're lucky, you might see an old snapping turtle surface. Reese McHenry, musician. My husband, Justin, and I go to four different restaurants when we want to look at each other instead of the TV. The place we frequent most is Allen and Son on 15501. It is the best barbecue. Come at me. We also go to IP3 and get pizza that makes one repeatedly burn one's mouth. The pizza is worth every third-degree burn. In Durham, we go to Thai Cafe. My favorite restaurant is Beasley's Chicken and Honey, which I loved even before Justin's cousin Chris Tobin was the head chef. Their chicken is divine, and they have Strohs. Neither of us drink beer, but if we did, we'd be Strohs people. Lily Balance, owner, William & Company. I like taking my four-year-old son out for picking him up after school on Fridays. He loves five-star, always orders the sesame chicken, and asks for extra broccoli so that he can also have dessert. Then we go upstairs and play pool. He's gotten really good at, calls it, hustling. I like going out on grown-up dates to Gallo Pelon late, when it's not crowded, for a mezcal and a snack from the bar. I love the blind barber, quiet and tucked away and on the way home. And Pili Pablo, rapper. I love to cook, so my perfect date would be a trip to the North Carolina Farmers Market to pick out fresh local ingredients based on what's in season. We'd then have a night in experimenting in the kitchen with new recipes. The next article, Me, Myself, and I. Dates don't have to involve another person. In fact, some of the best ones don't. Some people are, understandably, a little intimidated by the prospect of hanging out alone. Our culture socializes in a way that tricks us into thinking only the socially inept hang out alone. But that couldn't be further from the truth. Once you get comfortable in it, there are a few things better than rewarding yourself with some time that's all yours, whether you're partnered or not. First off, a high-quality self-date need not be reserved for nighttime hours. Three immediate places come to mind in Durham and Lakewood. Coco Cinnamon, Baby Scratch, and Monnet's. Get up early and read a book over a slice of pie in Baby Scratch's warm, sunny nook. Or do the same with a churro, or four, no judgment, across the street at Coco. Especially on the weekends, Monnet's can have a line out the door and down the sidewalk. But Monnet's policy is that if you sit at the bar, you don't have to wait in such a line. It's much easier to find one of those cherished abbreviated wait bar spots when you only have one body to worry about. If you're dead set on flying solo after the sun is set, all of your usual date spots will be just as welcoming to you alone as they would be with a companion. They're a person, not a dinner jacket. But my all-time favorite solo evening jaunt is dropping into the Raleigh crown jewel that is Mecca, which offers affordable meals and a cozy ambiance. I have yelled at just about everyone I have ever met to eat Mecca's blackberry cobbler, which is the food equivalent of receiving the best, warmest hug you could possibly imagine. There is no better indulgence. In Chapel Hill, Silver Spot offers an easy dinner and movie combination, whether though it's a restaurant offering that you can eat in the theater, or it's excessively stocked and gleaming snack counter. Splay out in one of their huge seats all by yourself. Pick your way to the bottom of a plate of truffle fries and see if you don't feel like a princess. Another strong option is to grab a burger from Al's Burger Shack, dip around the corner to Beer Study, and post up at the counter with a cold beverage of your choosing. A greasy slice from Italian Pizzeria 3 also does nicely. Or maybe you want to get dressed up and go somewhere a little nicer, just to feel fancy. That's cool, too. If you're a whiskey fan, Raleigh's Dram and Draught will feel like a godsend. But if wine is more your thing, stride over to Durham's Bar Brunello and sip one of their special orange wines they've got in stock. Splurge on a custom-crafted cocktail, then order a plate of pimento cheese and toast points and crush it. The bar does tiki-themed Waikiki Wednesdays now, too, which is another dose of silly fun. If you're feeling a little directionless, consider choosing a spot your usual dates would veto. Maybe you've been itching to try out a new vegan place, or you want to try a super spicy dish from Gourmet Kingdom, but your best friend only likes mild stuff. A self-date is the time to go for it and take home the leftovers. Adjusting to alone time out in public can make you feel a little weird and vulnerable, but it gets easier and more fun as you keep going. You spend more time with yourself than anyone else, so why not take the time to enjoy your own company? Next, hide your love away. Your spots for dating incognito if you know everyone in town. Whether you work in the service industry or have long hung up your apron, you build a register of bars you frequent and suddenly know nearly everyone in town, which is what makes our local watering holes great. But when you'd like to get a drink with a new romantic partner, Tinder match, or old flame, you don't necessarily want to introduce them to half the bartenders working downtown. Here are some spots in Raleigh and Durham to hit up if you're looking to keep a low profile. In Raleigh, Mitch's Tavern. Want to throw back to those college days feelings? Cozy up in a wooden booth at Mitch's Tavern and order a bowl of black bean chili. Then peruse the very decent and very affordable beer selection. Ask about the daily drink special. $3, highballs, anyone? The service is quick and attentive, and the food is delicious and, again, affordable. Bordering North Carolina State's campus, expect the hustle and bustle of a college-age crowd. It's your spot if you're looking to keep it casual, grab some drinks or snacks, and catch news and sports highlights. Circa 1888. Located in the Warehouse District, this is the place to play pool and show off your skills, or learn them, with multiple pool tables, including a tournament size. It's easy to snag one on the weekdays. But if you have to wait or pool isn't your thing, this is still a great bar for a little one-on-one conversation with your date. There are several couches to slip into and a cozy corner out on the patio with heat lamps in the winter. Bartenders are friendly and knowledgeable, with a decent house cocktail list and an extensive beer list. The Haymaker. Tucked away in Charter Square on Fayetteville Street, this is an easy craft cocktail bar to forget about, but not one to miss. The ambiance is cool, with the decor and soundtrack lending themselves to a vibe lauding something between modern and Victorian with a spin of hip-hop. You can find $12 craft cocktails or slightly cheaper classic cocktails and punch bowls, which are great for a double date. Recommended for 3 to 5 people. Drinks are served in lovely glassware, And if you go in late afternoon, the light of the space is gorgeous. And the bartender might even hand you a coupe glass full of goldfish crackers. Sky Tower Restaurant and Bar at the Holiday Inn. Okay, so it's a hotel bar and not a fancy hotel bar. But it does offer one of the most amazing views of the city from above, stiff drinks and an amenity. If you're looking to catch up with your BFF or partner and not be interrupted by music, friends, or TV, this is the spot. Sure, some of the food is overpriced and the lighting is a bit high, but none of that matters when you watch the sun set while sipping on a boozy martini. And the bar offers a bowl of house-made pub chips that's hard to put down. Watts and Ward. Yet another basement cocktail bar, sure. But walking into this one feels more like stepping onto a movie set or back in time. It's a labyrinth of rooms with several bars positioned throughout, jazz notes stretching through the speakers. Grab a pour of your favorite spirit, your date's hand, and wind your way through the nooks and crannies until you find a room to get lost in. Think, leather couches, velvet armchairs, pianos, low lighting. The prices are on the high end, but if sipping scotch in the library room with good conversation is your thing, don't miss it. And then turning to Durham, the Green Room. Green Room has it all. Quick, not too chatty bartenders, a large bottle selection, and an array of activities, whether you choose to participate or not. The large half-circle booth tucked in the front corner is a great place to sit and chat. If the conversation gets weird or boring, or you just want to do something other than looking attentive, play darts and pool. Most nights it's not too crowded, unless it's league night, in which case all the tables are full and the regulars don't have time to wait for your cute, awkward, terrible pool game to end. 106 Main. A number one spot for dates or girls' nights. The staff is over-the-moon hospitable and pleasant, and the solid drinks are cheap. This is definitely the kind of place to take someone if you want to show off a hidden Durham gem. All the cool kids already know about the 106 Main and also want to get to know each other. Comfy booths ensure it doesn't get too rowdy. When it's warm enough to sit out front, it's a great place for people watching. The Tavern. Simply put, the Tavern is fun. It's usually pretty popular for the 40 to 50-year-old crowd and dookies. The drink list is jam-packed with cocktails and shooters that'll lead to super endearing tales of college, even if reflecting on your first blue motorcycle makes you nauseous. Ponysaurus. Ponysaurus's sprawling patio allows for finding a faraway table to chat unbothered. Good beer and wine are reasonably priced. There are often cute dogs to pet and young children to laugh at as they stumble across the grass. Food trucks frequent the lot, too. Stop in on a Tuesday evening for chirba chirba and a couple of pale ale pints, plus all the Swedish fish and whoppers that you can ask for at the bar at just $1 a scoop. The proverbial going out for drinks date as a grad student is challenging. $18 cocktails have limited appeal, and most first dates don't lead to seconds, so it's important to keep things fun. Here are a few good boozy options around the triangle for the broke and potentially not so glamorous, under the heading of cheap dates, romance, or whatever, on a grad school budget. There's Doyle's Sports Bar. Venturing out to Doyle's, a couple of miles outside of Durham's downtown, gives some breathtaking room from 7 years of first dates gone awry. It's a dive bar's best format. Cheap drinks, simple entertainment, and an easy departure from downtown pressure. Beer starts at about $3, wine and liquor at $5. But nothing is too pricey, and pours are generous. For food, there's Piper's Deli next door and Taco Nachos around the corner. Doyle's is cool with people bringing in takeout food. Pool, darts and foosball, plus Jeopardy at 7 p.m. on TV, plus easy date night nerves. A digital jukebox provides music, so bring dollar bills to show off your good taste. The place vibes toward Prince, Bowie, and the like. The Hideout. Lone Rider's quirky tasting room, The Hideout is on the outskirts of Raleigh en route to Durham, close enough to the airport to watch planes come in. It's a great spot to try a new craft beer after a fun activity like an Umstead Park hike or quality time at Frankie's Fun Park. Both are right around the corner. The mock western interior is fun, and food trucks at peak times keep the outdoor area popular in nice weather. The bar can get crowded right after work, but things calm down quickly. Most Lone Rider beers you'll find at the grocery store are available on tap, but you're better off sampling from their line of exclusive experimental beers, any of which will run you between $5 and $7 per pint. The Atomic Fern. The Atomic Fern aims for a fun-loving aesthetic with stacks of old board games lining the walls, but it has the key characteristics of a great bar. Its long, accessible counter makes the most of a narrow space, and tall back booths lend intimacy to a pair of small groups. Decent beers on tap are priced around $5. Liquor is approachingly cheap. There's no food, but you can order from Bull City Burger just across the street. Game nights can get rowdy, so stake out a good spot at the bar. If you and your date are ready to compete, jump into one of their quicker two-player games while you're getting to know each other. Swap out Catton for Love Letter if things are going well. The Dead Mule Club. While East Franklin caters to undergrads and West Franklin is transformed by new condos, the Dead Mule Club hides in plain sight between them, consistently avoiding the attention of crowds. The few beers on tap are usually local, with a much wider assortment of bottles and cans. An excellent whiskey selection is a nice change from the sea of cheap liquor nearby. Signature cocktails start at $8. The food menu is limited, but decent. The bar, in a converted warehouse, maintains a homey feel. If you're lucky on a cold evening, you can nab a seat by the fireplace. When the weather is nice, the sweeping deck provides a comfortably distant view of passers-by. Next, play dates. When kids get together, parents should click too. An unexpected challenge of parenting is other parents. You spend a fair amount of time talking to other adults around the swing sets, at birthday parties, and outside classrooms, and it can get harder to find a friend in another parent than it was to find your child's other parent. But when you do, you plan play dates that are fun for all of you and include a delicious meal for adults and kids that go beyond the fruit snacks that you packed. Whether it's a birthday, celebration, a school holiday, or just a regular Thursday, here are some ideas for a multifamily play date in the Triangle, best of three or four families max. Pre-game at Monet's. While coffee and donuts are a quick and easy fix, this is a marathon, not a sprint, and you'll need protein. Fortunately, Monet's offers a diverse savory menu like bagel banh mi or tostados verdes, and maybe you get an egg or a peanut butter biscuit into your child. Check in for the day at Museum of Life and Science. Whether you have an imaginative indoor kid or a boisterous climber, there's an exhibit for every kid and family in every season. Hot days can be spent in the outdoors mist exhibit or piloting a sailboat. Cold days are cozy in the butterfly house and running around the sound space. Pro tip, if you need to re-up on caffeine, skip the long cafe line and head back to the gift shop near the entrance where there's a coffee bar in the back. Pacify the party at Loco Pops. Comedian and extreme dad of five, Jim Gaffigan, calls bribing children with ice cream the methadone of leaving any place your kids are having fun. But the promise of a popsicle might avert a meltdown when it comes time to end it at the museum. Local Pops has moved to a newer and bigger space with non-frozen treats and drinks that are weirdo in your crowd who doesn't like ice cream. Fill them up and tire them out at Bull City Burger and Brewery. The downtown Durham gastropub is a guaranteed crowd pleaser with all pasture-raised beef, a play area for future beer drinkers, and an enigmatic self-serve wine dispenser. Fact: if you're celebrating a birthday, it'll be cheaper and more satisfying to buy a few friends around and a meal than paying for your kid's entry class for an entire party at Chuck E. Cheese's. Friends busy? Regular weekend? Just want to keep it in the family? In Raleigh, start at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences. Younger kids will enjoy trying on animal costumes in the Discovery Room. Older ones can study specimens at the Naturalist Center. And everyone will delight in the butterflies and sloth at the Living Conservatory. It's also free, so you can spend as much or as little time there as you want to without guilt. Break for lunch at Raleigh Times, whose extensive menu can please all from fish and chips to tacos to pork belly lettuce wraps, plus an effortless authenticism that can only come from a bar where Barack Obama stopped for a campaign drink in 2008. Save room for a treat at Lettuce of Grace, like a pistachio-dotted baklava croissant or birthday cake-flavored macaron. Vow to spend more time in downtown Raleigh. A pub walk is somewhere in between a stroll around town and a mountain hike, just strengthening us to justify a pint or two and grown-ups at the end. Start at Hillsboro's River Walk. Park on Nash Street by Hillsboro BBQ Company and enter off Calvin Street or through Gold Park to follow the Eno River toward Chinchin Street. Pass along the path for a game of hide-and-seek at Patrick Doherty's Stickwork House before you exit the park at Weaver Street Market. Order the daily featured burger and a craft beer. The tap specials rotate. And beloved local wooden pub, small and big people, love the fries and wings. Well, that's about it for another week. This has been Bob Martin for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. And a reminder, this program is available as a podcast immediately following its initial broadcast. So until next week, goodbye, good night, and good morning.